Ooh.
Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. This is our continuing 2021-22 preseason coverage. If you look up there at the top of the tab, we've got a tab up there with all of our preseason coverage on and interviews, podcasts. This is our SEC preview show. I'm your host in the middle here, Chad Sherwood, joined on my sides by John Tytel, David Griggs. Down below us at the bottom row, we got Joey Fortson and Rocco Miller back from bracketeer.org as well. We are going to go through everything and anything about the SEC on this show. At the end of the show, we will tell you who's going to win the conference regular season title, how many teams are going to make the field, who those teams are, and I don't even know what else we're going to do. We're just going to kind of make it up as we go along. But let's start here. And probably the first of the, this is our fifth conference preview show. I think this is the first conference where there's, I think it's really wide open for the conference regular season champion. I think I've seen five or six different teams picked by different polls and different rankings, but let's start things off. I guess let's start things off where I guess we got to always start off. And Rocco, let me start with you here. The Kentucky Wildcats, absolutely horrendous year last year, 9-16. Are they back this season?
Oh, I jumped straight to the point there, Chad. So I would say most likely, I think on paper, they look like they are probably a top 10 team this year. I think you look at just some outstanding proven college players to start off with. Oscar Tshiebwe coming in the middle of last year from West Virginia, Kellen Grady from Davidson, who's got tons of experience, CJ Frederick, a big part of that Iowa run last year. And, you know, a guy, Sevier Wheeler, who's going to run the point possibly, that played for the worst team in the SEC last year, but now he's just going to have an abundance of weapons to give the ball to, which could actually be a good fit. Not to mention, you know, another all-star freshman, Ty Washington, who just got an NIL deal driving a Porsche. They're loaded in talent. And I think, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see Calipari. I don't think he's had a team this old during his Kentucky years, for sure. And just how he handles some of the adversity. He used to blame a lot of the losses on the youth. He's not going to be able to do that this year. There's a lot of juniors and seniors. So, but I think what he has done is thoughtfully, you know, brought in a lot of proven players. They're an older team. They're built to make a run to the Final Four. They brought in possibly the two best assistants from Illinois to help build this team. So I think you made a lot of good offseason decisions after the tough year last year.
Yeah, and John, let me ask you also about the same Kentucky team here. Rocco mentioned that we're seeing an older team. Are we almost seeing a different philosophy from Calipari, because we're seeing, I guess, more schools now competing for these top prospects that Kentucky seemed to grab all of them off in prior years?
Yeah, I mean, had you asked me a couple of years ago, I wouldn't think that Kentucky would even know where the transfer portal was located, because they just brought in freshman after McDonald's All-American after top recruit. And now, as Rocco said, they're bringing in Grady and Tshiebwe and everybody. They got CJ Frederick from Iowa. He's really making an impact, and Sevier Wheeler from Georgia. He's really building his team that way, and he's going to need it, because the non-conference schedule is just brutal. Duke, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Louisville, Kansas. Those are five top 40 teams on the schedule.
To that point, in a typical Kentucky year, it seems like, and what's funny is that this happens every year, and every year people seem to forget it, is they start off highly ranked, understandably so, and they get out there and they lose a couple games, and every now and then they either sweat out a game that you expect them to have an easy time with, Albany, Greensboro, generally against a good under the radar team, or they lose it entirely. And then everybody freaks out. And then Christmas break hits, the 20-hour practice week turns into an unlimited practice week. And they really start going 100 miles. Like, they don't start off going 100 miles an hour, but they typically get there around late December, early January, and then they're just trucking it in the end of the year. And then by the beginning of the next year, no Kentucky fans remember that they were wanting to fire Calipari at the end of November the previous year. Last year, it seemed to be that in reverse. They did lose an early game to Richmond, but they lost a lot of other games, and they didn't really kick it into 100 miles an hour like we typically see. With Kentucky being an older team, do we expect – what do we expect this year? I think you covered this already. The hard out-of-conference schedule, do they drop a few games, or does the fact that they're more mature mean that they're going to hit their stride earlier than what they normally do?
If you're asking me, I would say we're looking at a team that probably hits their stride maybe a month sooner. They used to come around usually mid to late January. Maybe that happens more in December timeframe now. And yeah, they're built to win pretty quickly. So, of course, we get to learn a lot. They'll play, I think, Duke in the opener and a couple other big games there early. So, I'm anxious to see what they've got.
Calipari needs to get them to play defense. It's when the defense – everybody focuses on the offensive numbers. But let's face it, it is about when Calipari gets buy-in for his defense. And if he gets that sooner with more mature players, then I think they'll gel sooner. But if the individuals in question, and remember, they're transfers, they might not have been happy, they might be always having wanderlust. If they don't have that, they won't gel. You know, it'll take them longer to gel.
Joby, while I got you on the screen here, aside from Kentucky, one preseason poll I read picked Auburn to win the SEC. I don't know that I'm with that high on Auburn, but what about Bruce Pearl's squad this season?
I'm not as high as that on Auburn. But what I find interesting with Pearl is Pearl has, and you knew this was going to be the case. We talked about Kentucky's transfer portal. And we're talking about the transfer portal with a lot of these very high end teams. He won a lot of the most competed for players in the transfer portal. And everybody who won a big man won Walker Kessler. So many people looked in yet another Georgia guard transfer and Katie Johnson, but Johnson was an excellent score for Georgia. Yeah, he went out and did that and then combines it with a great recruit in Jabari Smith. And so there is talent there and it's deep. I feel like they've built a pretty good roster there in the Plains. SEC is tough this year. It's tough to pick because I don't think you can just point to Kentucky, but I don't know if Auburn's your choice, but they have the talent to maybe finish like third in the SEC, third or fourth, and do exactly what they did a couple of years ago and make a huge tournament run. They have that capability and that talent to do so.
David, you agree with that? You think Auburn, not maybe not to win the SEC, but with the capability to make a Final Four run?
Well, I guess everybody's capable. It seems like the year they made the Final Four run, I would have never had picked them to do that before the start of the tournament. But I'm going to say that I could see them finishing in the rankings, easily being in the top half of the bracket, finishing in the top 25, and maybe getting to the Sweet 16. Maybe even getting a protected seed, but I'm not going to say that they're among the teams that I think that if you ask me to name what are 10 teams that could make the Final Four right now, Auburn would not be one of my 10.
John, how about their main rival, Alabama? We suddenly have a basketball state in the state of Alabama, do we not?
I mean, Nick Saban might disagree, but yes, I think Coach Nate Oates can hold his own. He won 16 games in year number one, 26 last year in year number two, SEC tourney title, 2 double-digit wins in the NCAA tournament, ran into UCLA in the Sweet 16, lost in overtime, so they were right there. Ironically, the Bruins are one of the few teams they don't play this year in non-conference play. Brutal schedule. 3 of last year's Final Four, Gonzaga, Houston, and Baylor. Tough, tough, tough. They do also lose 4 starters, Herb Jones, John Petty, Joshua Primo, Jordan Bruner. I don't know how they're going to get over that. Luckily, they have a 3-time All-SoCon transfer in Noah Gurley from Furman, a 2020 McDonald's All-American transfer from Texas Tech in Namari Burnett, and one of the best incoming point guards in the nation in J.D. Davison. Little concerned, they almost got upset by Louisiana in a charity exhibition yesterday. So certainly as an eye-opener, but the cupboard is hopefully going to be restocked.
I did hear Burnett was injured. I don't know what the status of that injury is. Brocco, you're nodding your head. Is he going to be available at some point?
I believe he's out for the season, actually.
Is he out for the season?
Yeah, he is.
Now he only averaged 5.5.
Learning that for the first time, I am very sorry to hear that.
He didn't get put up great numbers last year by any means, but I think they were that does.
He would have been off the bench even for this Alabama team. He would have been coming off the bench, but still, you hate to see that for him and the program. And we're going to find out a lot about Alabama this year for the precise reason that John mentions, and it's the long term. you know, Nate Oates is the darling right now, and he should be. I loved watching that team play. It was just fun basketball to watch and see how it is. Only do layups and three-pointers. Yeah, that whole philosophy. Only shots outside of 18 to 19 feet and shots inside of three, nothing else. Interesting strategy. But you lose Petty, you lose Herb Jones, you know, who, in my opinion, probably was SEC Player of the Year, in my opinion, because of his defensive skills on top of offense. All right, you lose that core. Can, even with this talent coming in, like Davison and Noah Gurley, who I love out of Furman, if you can Alabama repeat and do what they did last year? Are they a Sweet 16, Elite 8 team? Again, like a lot of preseason projections have them. If they are, then Nate Oates proves to me that he's the type of coach who's going to have Alabama every year competing for the Sweet 16, Elite 8, and Final Four. If they fall off, well, maybe it was just a flash in the pan with super seniors and super studs, you know, at the top end.
Yeah. Joby, as an under-the-radar guy, and I think Chad and maybe Rocco would agree, Nate Oates is a damn good coach. I think that, like, I'm not going to say that he's going to have Alabama permanently in the top 15 for the rest of eternity. I mean, it's going to ebb and flow, but he is going to get the job done there. That was a home run hire for the Tide.
Absolutely.
Yeah, David, let me stick with you. Another team that I'm seeing, I think the highest rated KenPom team heading into the season, in fact. How about Rick Barnes' Tennessee squad?
Yeah, a lot of people are big on them. And, you know, they kind of digressed a little bit last year. So, but with a lot of the roster they have coming in, and I think they really hit the transfer portal and they're recruiting real well, and the mix of players they have coming back. Yeah, they're way up there. I'm not quite sold on them as a top 10 team as of yet. I forget where they were in the preseason rankings, but it was really, really high. And some people, like you said, were picking them to finish ahead of Kentucky and even win the conference. But with so much new talent, again, I think by the time it gels, yeah, they're going to be a hell of a good team. I guess my question is to some of the other SEC gurus, are they good enough to be as good as they were a few years ago when they earned the one seed and had Admiral Schofield, or are they not quite that good yet?
Well, Tytel, let me throw that to you. You know, John Fulkerson is there, came back, but they lost a couple of big parts of the team.
I think Fulkerson is the key as the senior leader. The last time we saw him, he was getting punched in the face on national TV, and I assume he's recovered by now. The good news is, if you want to know for sure, you can pay him $80 and he'll do a cameo video for you. They do bring back Santiago Viscovi, who almost made the Olympics for Uruguay. They bring back Josiah Jordan James as the small forward. So a lot of pieces in place. Not sure how the freshmen will work out. I think it's Brandon Huntley Hartfield, if I recall. But I trust Rick Barnes. I don't trust him in the NCAA tournament because he's lost 25 of the 25 he's been in. But he can get him there.
I mean, it seems like they're relying a lot on their freshman players, aren't they? I mean, that's one of the reasons they're ranked so high is the recruits they have coming in.
Kenny Chandler is preseason all SEC in some books. So
you're right. I mean, Chandler obviously, but I don't know. I'm not ready to anoint them a top 10 team just yet, but I am not. Also not going to say that they're definitely going to fail to make it there. I'm just, when doing forecasts, Tennessee for me is the kind of team that's hard to forecast just because they have so many young players and new players.
Rocco, I'm seeing a lot of preseason love for the Razorbacks as well. And, you know, this team, they lost three double-digit scores off last year's team that did finish second place in the conference last year, though.
They did. And, you know, I think one thing that needs to be said first here is, you know, what Eric Musselman's building there is just through the roof. If you give this a program grade for all the recruiting, for all the social media things he does, for getting them to the Elite Eight last year, I mean, the arrow is shooting straight up for Arkansas basketball. With that said, I don't think this roster is as talented as last year. However, there are opportunities there for Arkansas to have a great season. I think they landed one of the best veteran players from the under-the-radar ranks with Stanley Umede. Now, he's only 6'6", undersized, for the SEC. He was a big man in the Summit. Very curious to see how his game translate. But I do think guys like Jalen Williams, who's going from that freshman to sophomore, same with Kalen Robinson, you're going to see a lot of development from those two. And Devontae Davis, we already know what he can do, a little bit more, a little more proof in the pudding for him. Same jump. You mix in some senior experience with Likes coming over from Miami, Tony coming over from Pitt. There's a lot to like, a lot of veterans on the bench as well. So not to mention the 7-3 Connor Vanover, that is a fun matchup play for Eric. I do think Arkansas is a top 25 team. I don't think they finish as high as a 3 seed like last year. I think they're somewhere in between.
Joe, be you with him?
I think they take a step back. My joke was, so he's talking about undersized. You know, I would say undersized transfer. I'd say Chris Likes is the one who fits that more anyway. His 5'7" frame. Likes is awesome. I loved him at Miami. He was outstanding. He will be a great addition for a muscleman run offense. But you could see the issues, the height issues, especially with some of these tall teams like an Auburn, you know, be able to take advantage here and there, like Alabama, even, you know, with some of their components. So I think Arkansas, they're a tournament team, but I'm like you, Rocco. I don't think they're a protected seed this year.
John, another team that was a tournament team last year and is Mike White's Florida Gators, which had one of the scariest moments of the season when Keontae Johnson fell down on the court. And but I'm hearing that he may or may not be playing this year. Did you have any news on that? And how huge would that be for the Gators, I guess, if Keontae Johnson is able to make the comeback and play? He was SEC preseason player of the year last year.
Which is why it would be huge. Last I heard is he is not ready to come back anytime soon.
Okay.
Obviously, like with an injury like that, it's something that can change, I think, very quickly, even though it's been so long. That in theory, I wouldn't be stunned if he plays in the season opener, but I don't think he's going to play in the season opener. Another team that has just been like loading up the transfers a la Calipari in terms of Brandon McKissick from Kansas City, Flanders Fleming Jr. from Charleston Southern, Marion Jones from Penn State, a bunch of transfers on this team. I like Mike White, both in the regular season and in the postseason. A lot of seniors on this team, so I think he's banking on this year to be the year. And if they had Johnson, I think I would pick them in the Elite Eight. Like, he is that good, and the rest of the team is that good. Without him, they'll make it, and they might win a game. I don't see him as a second weekend team, though.
Oh, Rocco, you have your ear to a lot of this stuff. Any word on chances that we'll see Johnson this year?
Yeah, similar to John, I heard the same. I think he's actually right now going to be an additional coach or manager on the team, which is, I think, helpful because he's the same age, of course, as all the players and can relate to the things they're going through. But right now, that's the plan. He's just an extended coach until he gets medical clearance. The good news there is he's involved daily. You know, he's in the locker room. He's a part of the family. But that's the extent of it so far.
All right. Well, Joby, how about Ben Howland's Mississippi State squad? This team finished 8-3 games over 500 last year and worthy runner-ups in the NIT.
A lot of folks are starting to get behind Mississippi State in the build-up to this year. I'm not there. We talked about, once again, every team, it seems like transfer. I just don't like the transfers Mississippi State got. I think they underperformed. I mean, Brooks dropped off, for instance. Yeah, he was all ACC preseason, first team, and some people player of the year at North Carolina entering the season last year, and only averaged 10. And North Carolina, we know the problems they had throughout the year. Likewise, Shaquille Moore was, be very honest, a disappointment in NC State. I feel like they're finding their way to Starkville, and it's not a case of, this is just tremendous. Yeah, look at all the new blood, and I'm just feeling it, Rocket Watts. And I think this could just be a lot of pieces trying to be put together that just don't quite fit. And I think they could be a disappointment, let alone not make the tournament.
Yeah, I'll say that, though, but Joby, let me ask you this. We've got a conference here with a lot of good backcourts And I think Mississippi State's the opposite of that. They're a front court team. And could that lead to the few extra wins that they need to get in the field?
But they also could be slow. You know, right. I mean, we saw, you know, I saw Brooks play a lot, you know, and he's not that great defensively. I mean, it was a frustration. And he's going to be put on the other teams. Like, this is where the Auburn, you know, you want a good front court. I think Auburn's got a pretty darn good front court coming at you. Yeah, you know, for instance.
That's not to say nobody has a good front court, but I'm saying.
Yeah. But Kessler and Smith, I like that pair. Like, for instance, I like Kessler more than I love potential, more than Brooks of the two UNC transfers. And so I don't know. I think they'll still be disappointed. Yeah, maybe they'll pull off against a Kentucky, a little undersized Kentucky team, or the Arkansas team that we were talking about that's just slightly undersized. Maybe they can pull a win here or there, but I then, at the same token, do they get beaten by good guard play from an unexpected source below them in the preseason standings?
And Rocco, Smith and Watts are both currently out, I believe, but they are both supposed to return some point or fairly early in the season, correct?
Correct. Yeah. So yeah, Watts is doing non-contract contact drills right now, and Smith is at least a couple weeks away. So they both may miss the opening week or two, which, you know, for Mississippi State, that's a interesting time frame because they're going to go to, at Thanksgiving, the Cable Beach Championship down in the Bahamas, play Louisville, and then Richmond or Maryland. It's a really important tournament for them. They're also going to have a possible test or two from Detroit Mercy and Morehead State before that. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how long those guys are out. They're definitely counting on both.
David, LSU was in the NCAA tournament last year. Assuming that they're eligible this season, your thoughts on Will Wade's squad?
Well, you know, it's, again, kind of hard to forecast. Only one starter is back from that team. They're kind of in reset mode a little bit. It's just hard for me to be all that excited about them. I don't really know what they're relying on. Assuming transfers and guys that they're looking to step up into bigger roles. But I just don't think that they have the pieces to get back to the NCAA tournament this year.
Yeah, Adam Miller, one of their key transfers, was supposed to be coming in. He's already gone for the season, ACL tear. So, another blow there. I'm not very big on this LSU team this season either. But John, one other team that made the NCAA tournament last year, maybe we should discuss them very briefly at this point, although probably still too early. But how about Quanzo Martin's Missouri team?
Great last year, and had they brought back everybody, I would like them again, but they bring back very little from last year's team that will look good. I just don't think there's enough there. I like the junior backcourt of Amari Davis and Jerron Coleman, but I think the front court is going to be a big problem, as you said, with much of this conference, especially in Columbia.
Yeah, actually, it's one of their keys there, Xavier Pinson last season. He's now on LSU, who we just discussed. And there's a transfer portal. You transfer one team in the conference to another. But
One of the things about Missouri is that on December 11th of this year, we are going to see probably the biggest moment that sports has seen, maybe ever, but at least in the last decade or so. It is the return of the border war. They are going to Lawrence, Kansas. It is at long last back. And my thing is that going to take so much energy and enthusiasm away from the NCAA tournament? Is it going to have a negative impact on the rest of the season? Because that's just how big that game is.
Maybe we got to bring that up again when we discuss Kansas and the Big 12 show too. David, I don't think they have much shot in Lawrence, but Joby, our good friend Uncle Buzz at Texas A&M.
I actually think, all right, so I've been sour. You've gotten me sour. Yeah, I'm enjoying the crowd and kind of sour a little bit on LSU, sour compared to others on Mississippi State. This is a team, you know, so who's going to get those wins? This team. And it's because now, when you talk about transfers, he's starting four guys who transferred in. But they're undervalued on what they can bring. Assuming Radford Radford transferred away from Virginia Tech, much like Buzz, but Radford left due to knuckleheadedness, of the criminal kind. So, you know, assuming Radford's around to play, that is a great get. And it fits his system. Radford plays a style that fits exactly what he did at Marquette, of all places. I actually think those great Marquette teams are very solid, I should say. Marquette teams that he built together. That's what this is. You know, along with Javonte Brown in the middle, you know, from UConn, Henry Coleman, underrated player at Duke, didn't get the PT. He should have gotten more PT probably, and he will get his chance there. I think he'll be very solid. This team, I think, is just full of guys who can slash, score. Marcus Williams from Wyoming. This is going to be a team that will win a lot more games than people project them to do so. And will they make the tournament? I don't know. But, this is at least an NIT level team.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, Joby. Are you proclaiming them to be best of the rest or good enough to be inside the bubble good? It sounds like you're leaning more towards
I think they're right on that. I think they are, like, for instance, I have them ahead of LSU.
I do too. Yeah.
And I think the conference is going to get just by mere force of will and size, is going to get a number of bids, and they could be that last one. I'm not saying they will be, but they are going to be in contention for it.
I actually really like the Texas A&M pick as a good dark horse, bubble team, first four type of team. Rocco, I love to ask you about teams that I can't figure out. One of the toughest teams I've had to look at this conference is Ole Miss, that went 10-8 in conference, 16-12 last year, made the NIT, a lot of pieces back, but I don't know that I have any faith in them.
Yeah, I think this Ole Miss team is a little less than desirable based on the guys they lost last year. They do get Joyner, Rodriguez, Allen, and Merle back, guys that contributed last year, but not Shuler. I mean, Shuler was a big talent. That's going to be tough to make up for. But I do think, the way Kermit Davis gets it done is defensively. I think Nysier Brooks coming in to protect the rim is going to help them. They are actually a top 25 adjusted defense last year. I think they could actually improve on that and get into the top 20. But I do think their offense will take a major step back, and that's going to cause them to be underdogs most nights in the SEC. So the way Ole Miss is going to have to win is kind of old school Kermit Davis, mix a bunch of junk defenses and find a way to win it late. I do think there's enough here to be, in that 7, 8, 9, 10 range. I've currently got them ninth in the league.
Okay. John, we've gone through all but three schools so far. I may not have talked about the potential player of the year in the conference, and Jerry Stackhouse's team there, and Scottie Pippen Jr.
If you like the Bulls back in the day, you know that they only won after Jordan got some help from Scottie Pippen joining the team in the late 80s, early 90s. And now we get Scottie Pippen Jr., who is, again, not going to make the NCAA tournament. As a junior, he's already arguably the best player and scorer in this conference. I am a little surprised he came back for another year, because I think that he's got the offensive skills and, frankly, the defensive and athletic genetics to play at the next level. But I'm sure Stackhouse is very glad he's back. They bring in a couple of transfers, Rodney Chapman from Dayton, Liam Robbins from Minnesota. So they actually have like a nice mix of size and quickness and veteran leadership. I think Pippen can score well over 20 a game, because there's not many other people to take away his shots.
But you're not putting the Vanderbilt near the tournament field, are you?
Not that tournament, no.
David, South Carolina, angry Frank Martin, or maybe not so angry.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of angry Frank, longtime friend of the show. And, he's a good coach. He's had some great teams in the past, and this year he's got a team.
I think that's about all we can say about South Carolina. There's just I don't see a backcourt here in a backcourt heavy league. And that's a big problem, I think. is his job in jeopardy, do you think, David?
I would hope not. But maybe. He really hasn't panned out. I mean, I wouldn't say that he's been a complete failure by any means, but he hasn't gotten them going. I think the way that they were hoping when they hired him, and the way that many of us were expecting, I know that he had a long way to go to get them going, but it hasn't happened yet. I don't think his job's in jeopardy, but maybe it is. And is he, part of me wonders, how does he, what is he getting to a point to where he's questioning whether or not he can be successful there? He can certainly be successful. He was at K-State, and that was a hard place to win at the time that he got there. And the success he had there was kind of unparalleled. It was at a level that they really hadn't been before or since. He was there 1 year under Hugs, but I think that he was instrumental in getting it going before he took over as head coach. And it just hasn't happened at South Carolina.
Didn't they have a couple good tournament runs under Frank?
One good tournament run.
I'm sorry.
He's only made one tournament there, and he made the Final Four.
And he made the Final Four.
So I wouldn't say a Final Four is exactly bad, but yeah, I guess that's the problem, is only one tournament appearance. Joby, I think we have another coach that's probably on the hot seat, and Georgia, Tom Crean.
I think the Syracuse women's basketball team and the Georgia men's basketball team were competing to see how many players can we chase away and win the award for that. The top 10, yes, you heard that right. The top 10 in the rotation are brand new. The top 10. A couple of JUCO guys, a couple of guys, Aaron Cook and Jabri Abdul-Rahim, which I obviously know quite well, who were very highly regarded when they came to their prior schools in Gonzaga and Virginia, but didn't produce, but they didn't have opportunity. So they could pop open. But this team's a mess. I mean, if he puts something together, if I dare say, if he got to 500, not just in the SEC, but overall, I'd actually say that's a hell of a coaching job. However, coaching is not just about what you do X's and O's on the court. It's also about developing and building a roster in the college game. And I'd say it's already a massive fail if you're chasing away your entire – we've already spoken in this podcast about two starting Georgia guards at Kentucky. That's like crazy, you know, in other places. So, you know, crazy.
Well, that is all the teams in the SEC, by my notes at least. I don't think we missed anybody. But what I want to do now is run through each of you, ask you a couple questions. Number one, who's going to win the regular season championship? Number two, how many teams are going to make the field? And number three, do you have any other final thoughts about the SEC? Rocco, why don't we start with you?
All right, so winning the SEC, I'm going to just go with my coach that I love, Nate Oates in Alabama. I think John pointed it out, but also I think you can look at last year's team sheet. So last year, Alabama did not play a Q4 game. I don't think this year they'll play a Q4 game either. All of their non-conference games, even the mid-major teams, are predicted top three in their league. So very, very small chance they'll play a Q4 game. What that really means, and especially watching a lot of Nate Oates interviews the last few weeks, is they might start like 5-3 or 5-4 out of the gate. But I think by the time they get to SEC play, that schedule is designed for a purpose, and that's to get this team ready for the wars in this league. And I think with their inside-outside style of play, it keeps bodies fresh. They have NBA training camp attendance that they've done 7 straight years as a staff. This is an NBA model program, and they've got, you know, guys that can shoot across the roster. So I pick Alabama to win it at the end. Kentucky second, Tennessee third, Arkansas, then Auburn. And then I will say Florida gets in as the sixth team. I do have a feeling they'll get a seventh bid. I'm just really torn between Mississippi State or LSU, especially after the Adam Miller injury. That threw things off for me with LSU. But I do think between those two, or maybe a team coming up like Ole Miss or Vanderbilt, we could see a seventh bid.
I'll tell you, I was going to wait my picks for a second here, but I almost 100% agree with Rocco. I love the Alabama pick to win the conference. I love his list of six teams that are in. I agree that there is a seventh. I'm also throwing Texas A&M, though, as my dark horse into that discussion, as we mentioned earlier. But Joby, how about you?
I mean, you mentioned the A&M. I hate to sound repeat, but I actually agree. I'd love to get in some fight, but I agree. I think Alabama is my pick as well. The interesting is, who do you think is the player of the year? That is actually a really tough call. And I'm going to say the best player on the best team or at least the one that will be scoring the most points. You could argue that Quinterly or Gurley, but I'm going to go with Jaden Shackelford. I think he's going to put up some major points. He's going to take a lot of the petty points are going to come his way, and he's going to have high teens at the end of the day, which will impress a lot of folks. And he can do that two-way play that's not as good as Jones, but in the similar fashion. Six is a good number. Florida, I float back and forth. You know, as Tytel said, if Johnson was playing, it'd be a no-brainer, but he's not. And it's a good roster, but you know, that Mike White has. But you know, is this where A&M sneaks in off, as you heard from my preview? Could be, but I think some it'll be six, with seven knocking on the door. But I'll go six.
And any other thoughts about the SEC?
I actually think it is the SEC has when we went through these teams over and over again, transfer portal. This is going to become an even bigger deal for the SEC because the football revenue and the SEC network revenue, the revenue will build the programs and the infrastructure of these programs even more to where NIL money and elements like that. We mentioned the Porsche deal, at Kentucky. That will become more and more prevalent. And I think the SEC will, because the money will be flowing, will be the biggest beneficiary nationwide as far as conferences go.
Okay. John, how about you?
So I'm going to pick Kentucky to win the SEC after a 9-16 season, because when you have a coach who has won 742 games in his career and had not missed the postseason since 1989, you think he's just going to sit around and like slowly, gradually rebuild? No, he's jumping in with both feet and 10 transfers and two McDonald's All-Americans, and he is going to make a statement this year because he was embarrassed, frankly, last year, and he's not going to stand for it. As far as the conference, I will set the over-under at 6.5 and take the under. I think there's a lot of contenders for the top with Tennessee, Arkansas, Kentucky, Alabama, Florida, Auburn. I don't see LSU, Mississippi State, Texas A&M making it. Maybe, but I'll go with 6. And as far as a fun fact, the thing I love is that you heard the old phrase, if you can't beat them, join them. So DJ Jeffries, last time we saw him on the court with Memphis, he was getting 15 points and 5 blocks in the NIT title game last spring against, yes, Mississippi State. Now he plays for Mississippi State because Ben Howland's like, look, I don't want you beating me again. Come play for me. Love it.
True. David, you got to finish this off.
Okay, I was going to go with Alabama until that became the trendy pick, so I'm going to instead go out on a ledge and take Kentucky. Bit of normal SEC dark horse out there. But for the reasons Tytel said, I just think that the makeup of that roster, with it being more older and more mature than what we're typically seeing, I think it's going to gel a lot quicker, and I think they're really going to bounce back, and they have something special. I really do like this Alabama team. I like it. Nate Oates as a coach, and kind of like what Rocco alluded to, I like the schedule that they're playing, but I still don't think they're going to go all the way to the top. Tennessee, I'm not as big on them as some people, but I still like them a lot. I don't know if they're top 10 good, but they're definitely top 25 good. Normally when I say that about Tennessee, they become top 10 good. So you're welcome. And then again, Auburn, I like Auburn. I like Mississippi State. I think 6 teams make it ultimately, with Kentucky being the conference winner. As far as other thoughts on the SEC, it's the last year that we'll see it in a 14-team format. It's going out to 16 next year with Oklahoma and Texas coming into the fold. That has set off a chain reaction that has basically led to the destruction of CUSA. If you follow it down the line, nice going, SEC.
SEC killed Conference USA. Well, we'll see. You know, yeah. Conference USA
very indirectly, but very directly. They took 2 from the Big 12, who took 4 from the American, who took 6 from Conference USA, which caused a panic and caused 3 more to leave Conference USA. And now there's barely any Conference USA left.
Well, we'll discuss Conference USA a bit on there under the radar podcast coming up next week. Yeah. But on that note, I do want to take a chance to thank everybody for joining us for our SEC preview here. Like I mentioned at the top, up there, there are is the link for all of our season preview podcasts, all the interviews, all the great content we have, all the media day recaps, everything is up there. All the exhibition games are up there in another tab as well. But at this point, though, on behalf of John Titel and David Griggs up here, Joey Fortson and Rocco Miller from, I think we're supposed to call it Rocketeer.org now, but it's Bracketeer.org. I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. We'll be talking to you again real soon.